see.
Which is why I set you up with my first days.
Yeah, okay. Page 4.
Okay.
And we'll touch on this several times, probably.
Mm-hmm.
It says, following the failure of civilian agencies to act effectively in 1967, military control over intelligence was vested in the courts. That is true and false at the same time. Military, as I turn in terms of the earlier discussion of military-civil relationships, the civil organizations would never have proposed or agreed to, President Johnson or not, the Corps' arrangement without a strong, very strong civilian personality up there to defend and protect and etc. That we did not regard ourselves at any time as coming under military control.
Okay.
And the only reason was that the fact that there was this powerful civilian deputy to Westmoreland.
Okay.
Okay, so that takes care of item number one. Okay.
And please feel free to mark up.
Yeah, okay. Page, let's see. At the bottom of the page, it talks about the year 1967 did see a revision of U.S. strategy in the form of civil operation, revolutionary development staff, and so forth, to include an organized effort against the infrastructure, but the major effort remained military. U.S. strategy from the beginning was an effort of a non-military nature. So I don't think that this is a very well-phrased statement that Johnson has here. There were efforts against the Viet Cong infrastructure, but they were scattered and piecemeal, and strategic hamlets, and this and that, and the next thing. And as we talked earlier, if something didn't work within 6 months, somebody would come up with another idea, and pretty soon the old one. Pretty soon you had a bunch, six or seven different ideas running in parallel.
Okay.
Every one of them being nickel and dime to death.
Okay.
And so that was sort of a fiasco. But it's not true that the problems were unrecognized. Okay. Page 34. I simply, we're talking about village level politics, and on how do we say it, page 34, FF, and following pages here, starting with village level politics, my comment on this is vastly oversimplified, that Johnson doesn't go into any of the important things about the evolution of either the Diem government or the communist insurgency or anything. He talks about it a lot, but once again, that what I talked about on the telephone, that Fingerspitzengefühl, is missing. I don't know what it is, and it's just missing.
So I got the feeling there was some revisionism going on in this, and that it was not a mistake, but it was they were conscious.
Well, anyway, that section is vastly oversimplified, and I have the comment on page 35 is not noted is the great expansion of VC control in the disorganization which followed the assassination
of Diem. Okay.
Now, Johnson talks about that later, but he doesn't talk about where he should talk about it, and he never really talks about it as an important factor. Now, Roger Hilsman was the basic architect, I suppose, spiritually if not by direct order of the Diem overthrow. Now, I don't want to second-guess history on whether there was any better way of dealing with Diem than the U.S. government adopted. Diem was a major frustration. Probably he had to be replaced. But he had to be, this had to be done in a much more kulturna, as the Russian would say, manner, than was done, without perhaps an assassination or whatever.
Could have rigged an election or something.
Well, that kind of thing, but also with an appreciation of, with the realization of what might happen afterwards and an effort to pick it up. The thing is, Roger Hilsman was not a very bright guy, I don't think. I always thought he was a pompous horse's ass. Now, I had nothing to do with him after 1949. He and I sat in on a graduate seminar at Yale. That's where I knew him. And I did not form a high opinion of him at that time. And nothing which ever happened since changed that opinion. He was, he had an idée fixe about special forces type operations. He claimed to have been in the OSS or something like
it's
the
true.
OSS.
It's true. He was in special forces.
And he claimed also to specifically gone into China to rescue his father in a Chinese prisoner of war camp or a Japanese POW camp in China.
It's true.
At the end of the war. No, I know that's true.
Yeah, okay.
But, I mean, he couldn't get over this. I mean, you know, this was... and maybe I'd be the same, I don't know. But
he still can't get over it till this day.
The biggest hero in the world for having done this thing.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm sure that Roger Hilsman was one of the moving figures behind Jack Kennedy's establishment of special forces in the first place. He's pompous. Well, obviously, you've met him.
Well, I've read things recently by him within the last 6 months.
Yeah.
So I know where his position today is the same as it was.
I would simply describe him as a pompous ass.
Okay.
And with the DM business, probably something that was badly mishandled, just as we've done some of these other things too. In any event, I won't put a number on it, but I think that the communists may easily doubled and may even tripled the territory under their direct day in, day out control.
From the time of Diem assassination.
After in the several years following the Diem assassination.
And that's something I had very much intended to include.
Now, at this point here, Ralph sort of elides over the whole problem, doesn't even mention it. Yeah. Later on he talks about it, later on in the book. But this is a lack of a systematic discussion of the origin of the Vietnam conflict and the origin of American
response.
Okay. Page 47. I see that talking about the organization of the insurgency, and particularly of Kosslyn, and I've just put the comment down there, radio links. We knew at that time who was telling what to whom, and in what fashion, because of the communications intelligence business known as traffic analysis. And when we talk about comment traffic analysis, that's off the record. But the radio links are a definite. They gave us a definite picture of what the organizational structure of this whole insurgency was. Now, fortunately, I found out in footnotes later in Johnson's book that there was some guy that wrote a book about that. And so it's maybe not as classified as it could be. Now, especially that Casey is no longer running the CIA. Maybe I won't be prosecuted for having said something that's classified, but is also in the
book. The mention of the word comment in itself is not... there's no prohibitions against that.
Well, comment.
And these things are on the record.
Stuff. Yeah, very good.
Okay.
Now let's see. We're going down to page 48. And we're down to footnote 2. Let's see. And I refer to a note on page 35. Yeah, and that is the That note on page 35 is the expansion of DC control. We talked about that.
Okay.
In footnote 2, we're talking, Douglas Pike, or whatever his name is,
yeah.
is talking about the National Liberation Front main forces. He said the 464, they numbered some 10,000 and about 30,000 guerrillas. And then 1964, the year after the assassination, saw a rapid build up to 30,000 main force and about 80,000 paramilitary.
That supports just what you were saying.
This supports what I was saying, but once again, Johnson talks about that in more detail later, and we're okay on that.
Those numbers are accurate?
Yeah. Okay. Now, well, no, I won't say the numbers are accurate. And this goes to a new subject, separate from the book, Sam Adams.
Yeah.
You mentioned his
name. But you were going to comment on him.
I was going to comment, didn't.
Okay.
Sam Adams was and is a nut.
Okay.
He has an E-Day feat. He was talking about the VC order of battle, what should be included, what shouldn't. These debates were so... It's like the scholastics Middle Ages, how many angels on the head of a pin.
Okay.
Nobody knew what these fucking figures were.
Okay.
You could make estimates. I made estimates and came up with stuff that was basically within the MACV order of battle numbers.
Okay.
And you, if you go down a province by province, how many guys do you think here and how many guys there, so forth and so on. But it's all guesswork. And nobody knows. And for Sam Adams to have gotten into the hassle that he did, which I was right in the middle of it in the sense that I was working in SAVA at the same time Sam was trying to push his point of view. Okay. Sam had his day in court. George Carver listened to him till he couldn't stand the sight of the guy anymore. The Pentagon people listened to him till they couldn't stand the sight of him anymore. The FE division downstairs couldn't stand the sight of him anymore.
Then he quit.
And then he quit, yeah. Well, but in other, when I say he had his day in court, not only did they have all this, but George Carver set up this conference out there in Saigon, and Sam Adams went out there. Once again, the guy was outvoted.
Yeah.
And so then he quit. And so then he's been pursuing this thing ever since. It winds up in probably one of the most shameful episodes in U.S. history, which is the CBS thing, which was totally erroneous. I shouldn't say totally erroneous, but in terms of its thrust of a conspiracy, blah, 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 totally erroneous and illicit reporting. And we have to remember that CBS is the news service that at one time financed a revolution. Someplace, I forget where, so that they would be able to be there on the spot when it took place and have the scoop on the news.
Yeah.
Okay.
They also were a news agency that the Viet Cong would call up when they were going to blow somebody up, blow up a building so that CBS could be there to film it and stuff like that. Yeah,
I didn't know that one, but that just adds to it.
Yeah, why was the camera there when this terrorist incident occurred?
In any event, as far as I'm concerned, Sam Adams let himself be used as a tool, and he brought in some reprehensible figures like George Allen, whose name I've mentioned already.
Is that dealt with in the... Wait, I'm going to see what's going on.
No, that's... off of Sam Adams... back to Ralph Johnson's dissertation. Let's see. Page 58. I'm just astounded that Ralph would make this kind of statement. The formation of the People's Revolutionary Government, which was recognized by the bloc countries, India, Burma, and Indonesia, was the key to the Viet Cong infrastructure efforts to gain blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
Well, now, India, Burma, and Indonesia have never been and are not now regarded as bloc countries.
They're not aligned.
They're non-aligned countries? That's right. And this is a bunch of horseshit.
Okay.
And Ralph should have known better.
Yeah.
Than to phrase it that way.
Okay. They're very, very jealous of their non-aligned statuses.
He should have said that... was the Viet Cong effort, not the Viet Cong infrastructure, but the Viet Cong political effort, to gain international recognition and support in the Third World. That's what, that would be the correct way to say that. Okay, Central Research Agency on page 61. I don't know that we ever had a good organizational knowledge of the North Vietnamese Intelligence Service.
Okay,
period. Page 95.
Got a mark there.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to remember what I wanted to say about it. Yeah, okay. This is the thought here of the contrast between American expectations of a quick win versus the fact that, in truth, that the Vietnam War was a war of attrition.
Okay.
That paper I did for Helms the other day talked about a war of attrition.
That's right.
Okay. Page 95 here, we have a quotation that General Westmoreland finally did recognize and admit to President Johnson that the war in Vietnam is a war of attrition.
Okay.
And so they go on the next paragraph. Despite its faults, the strategy of attrition did make some notable progress. Efforts directed against communist sanctuaries, support, lines of communication, etc., achieved considerable impact, although not enough to force the Viet Cong to quit. Though the enemy main forces were ground down over a period of time. That is one of the points that we made in our various infrastructure papers talking about military operations. But not only that, I think our after-action information from North Vietnam, specifically in the book The Tunnels of Cu Chi, show that, in fact, that degradation, as I called it, of the VC infrastructure caused by these military operations, it had more of an impact than we even guessed at the time. And so that military effort that Westmoreland was pursuing was by no means a failure.
Yeah, no, okay.
By no means a failure. Everybody says the American Army failed in Vietnam.
It was not measurable, though.
And it was not measurable at the time.
Right, but yeah. That doesn't necessarily mean it was
ineffective. But this is where the communists have it all over us. You know, the Russians are the greatest chess players in the world.
Except for the days of Bobby Fischer.
Except for the days of Bobby Fischer. And they're also some of the greatest mathematicians in the world, the Russians. And our presidents, our various naive presidents as they come along, and various other people, never seem to recognize those facts. But the North Vietnamese were prepared to fight for 20 years, and the Americans were not. That's what it boils down to. And we actually won that war. And then we drew away. But that's okay. On page 110, and FF 109. Oh, yeah, I have page 109, sorry. A remark here that a futile attempt to underwrite what was in essence a social revolution called pacification without involvement in the internal policies of the government of Vietnam. Ralph Johnson is saying it was impossible. Grievous U.S. error. Johnson's wrong. I think that you could pacify the country and do what had to be done, and put the so-called social revolution of terms of competence of administrative and political affairs, et cetera, et cetera. You could do that, but we're talking in terms of 20 years.
Okay.
And we're talking on the Korean model, which even today, of course, is not a solved problem. Okay, pages 109, FF, integration of agencies. It is simply not true that there was no effort no further effort, as they say here, to integrate U.S. agencies for pacification until the 1967 advent of courts. Okay. That is not a true statement. I shouldn't say it's not a true statement. It is an incorrect statement. Okay. He makes a mistake. I cite here, see below, pages 126, 129, in which some of those efforts are identified. The Simple. Coordination of agencies was a constant problem and a constant failure. If you went through the files out there in Saigon of the various ambassadors and commanding generals McVie before the U.S. buildup started there, there's one effort after another to coordinate the counterinsurgency effort. Okay. You go, and now I can't specify more detail. I can say this, that every year there was a renewed thrust, paper promise, I suppose, or lip service, whatever, a new effort to integrate the province team, so-called. And every one of these things was started out with great fanfare, and then it fizzled off into the dark, and nothing was, more was ever heard about it.
Okay.
So this is once again what we're talking about when we say continuity of effort. It's not so much that what we were doing was wrong, but we never stuck with it.
Okay,
so I have notes here, see these pages in the history of the province team. Most importantly, after the buildup started, of course, was Ambassador Porter, I should say, Ambassador Porter, Deputy Chief of Mission. And it was out of his integrative efforts that we got the OCO solution there, which was only a half measure. But Porter himself, of course, he was a quiet, low-key guy. He came there in early 1966, and his mission was to integrate the civilian counterinsurgency effort. Counterinsurgency / nation building. That's two heads of it. And he couldn't do it any more than anybody else, because you're dealing with these major bureaucracies with all their vested interests, the ruts that they're happy staying in, and so forth and so on. But it still resulted in some progress, and it was an effort which, even if it failed, was a worthwhile thing.
Okay.
The question still was making agencies do what they said they were going to do. Okay, page 117. This is just a reference to the State Department, the political approach to Vietnam, American failures to understand the Vietnamese, their tradition, their history. As Ralph says here, the Confucian heritage included.
Okay.
The old business of trying to impose the American business on a foreign culture that the Americans did not understand.
Okay.
New subject. Let's see. Page 120, Roger Hilsman. Just a note, not a very bright guy. That's the end of that. Page 121. Okay, here Johnson recognizes the what happened after Diem's assassination. Notes that what existed of the civil service and royal government authority and structure neared collapse. Says here, communist inroads became more apparent. Like hell they did, they expanded greatly. And they did become more apparent too. The communists became more arrogant about the areas they controlled.
Yeah.
They start flying their flags and stuff like that.
Okay.
But the important thing is that the communist inroads have greatly expanded. Okay, new subject, page 123. Yeah, okay. General Khan's proposal to create a rural civil service recognized a basic government of Vietnam weakness that most Americans seem to overlook or dismiss. True statement. And this bears on what I was saying the other day about the National Academy of Administration.
Okay.
This was part of USAID's nation-building effort, at which they are very bureaucratic and very usually unsuccessful. And when they terminated that, it was, I think, a great mistake. Okay, new subject, page 125. McNamara, An Alternative Strategy of Attrition, 17 November 1966. I simply note this as a recognition of the fact it was that the Americans were beginning to realize that this was a war of attrition.
Bad word. I always thought that psychologically, that word attrition really turned off the American public.
Oh, sure, because it goes back to the slaughter in the trenches.
That's right. It's a bad, bad word.
But that's what you're doing. You're just wearing them down.
Yeah.
It's what General Grant did against the South.
Yeah.
He just ground them down at whatever the cost was.
Yeah.
And that's, it's a bad word.
Bad.
Still, if Americans can't, you know, face facts, they've got a problem.
Can't deal with the word.
Which they can't, obviously.
Because, no.
Let's see. I had a note here on the page dealing with new organizational concepts, but I can't see any particular point that I wanted to make. Okay, no problem there. We talk here about Ambassador Porter and his Office of Civilian Operations, et cetera, et cetera. And, there's the note here on page 128. Porter saw his duties primarily as a coordinating effort. Does not intend to get in the middle of individual agency activities and responsibilities.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I said / Phoenix did, too.
Okay.
I mean, you know, these people aren't dummies. Okay. Robert Comer and his background a little bit. We touched on that. That's page 132.
Okay.
I don't think Ralph Johnson does him justice.
Okay.
I might also say that an ISEC / Phoenix thing wouldn't work without a blowtorch personality such as Comer. Anyway, it was built around him. Okay. Page 164. Starts getting personal,
good.
I suppose.
Yep.
It says here that Robert Comer assigned Rickham to the CIA-staffed Revolutionary Development Component.
I remember telling you about that.
Of the Office of Civil Operations. Well, that's nonsense. I was in OCO long before Comer was ever decided to come out to Vietnam. I was the chief of liaison branch field operations, and we simply transferred that entity intact over to OCO in the fall of 1966. And this is why I say that it's essential to start with the chronology of events.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this may reflect something which is behind the scenes. I don't know. It could very well be that Comer, in discussions with John Hart or other people, when OCO was being established, may have insisted that the units, these units of the agency go over
to OCO.
But I don't think so, because I was the one that persuaded Stone and John Hart to let these things go.
Okay.
Now, this conflict, if you will, got right to the heart of the CIA philosophy and doctrine, that this was counter to the normal roles and missions of the CIA, counter to its philosophy and tradition, opposed in Washington, opposed by a lot of people in the field, but they bought it, we did it anyway. And it was at that point, if you recall, I said, Howard Stone, Rocky Stone, he said, well, he had to wash his hands of the whole thing, just transfer them lock, stock, and barrel, which was fine, that was the best solution. FI means provide intelligence, but it has no concept within the CIA, for example, of doing anything about it on the FI side of life. They'll have their PM operation, that's all over here, though, and it's something separate.
Okay.
But it's, you might say, it's an academic exercise, exercise in art for art's sake, it's masturbation, if you want to call it that, simply to produce intelligence. But yet, that's the FI role in the world. And when we went against that, there was a lot of opposition. And as a matter of fact, I see 2 years later, CIA did exactly what we refused to do at the time, that was pull out completely.
Okay.
So, Comer, at least to my knowledge, had nothing to do, and probably in reality, had nothing to do with my assignment to the office.
Because you went over with
I was over with everything else, and I was the one who suggested, wanted to do it.
It really doesn't make it sound like you were taken out of one role and put into another role specifically purpose.
And that was not the case.
But that's a problem with his language,
that's
perhaps.
That's a problem with his language, and with his understanding too. I don't think that he didn't sit down and make a chrono, and he didn't know
what followed.
Well, he did. We had a long interview, and then that was the end of it. He never came back and checked any text with me or anything like that. I didn't want to censor or exercise any kind of veto. I'm interested in the correct statement of facts. That's all. Page 171. Well, through this whole discussion here of the establishment of Phoenix, establishment of ISACS, it's not too bad, except that Johnson got his various documents mixed up.
Okay.
Now, once again, if you keep them in sequence, if you keep the combined campaign plan for 1966. My memorandum on VC infrastructure of November 66. And then the May 67 concept paper, which Comer rejected.
Okay.
The early June paper, which was a detailed military-type roles and missions elaboration of the concept paper, which Comer did accept, and which went... If you keep all of those in proper perspective, well, then you'll miss some of the mistakes that he made.
Okay.
Okay. On page 171 and 173, 172 is a chart. We have the statement here, strengthen the proposal. That's the early June paper. Emphasize pressing need to decentralize and place operational focus on the province and district. Three highly successful a district intelligence and operation coordination center were described.
Mm-hmm.
That's much more arguing. They were only about 2 months old at best. The oldest one was 2 months old.
Okay.
The newest one was 2 weeks old, and the VC had overrun that village a week before and killed everybody except the province advisor. So it cannot be said that three highly successful operations were described.
Okay.
We went up there, and two of them were operating. One of them was operating well. It had been 2 or 3 months in operation.
Is that one that Wall had
Wall had an influence on all this, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. But you can check the annex to that paper to tell you which one was first and which was second.
Because you said earlier that Wall had, when he was deputy in
I-Corps
had done something with Diox.
I think,
Are these the same ones?
Yeah, these are the ones. I think that he was the guiding spirit behind them, although I don't know that for a fact.
Okay.
Whoever idea it was, Wall picked the ball up and ran with it. There's no question about that. Okay. Same page, 173. There's just a statement of fostering a rapid upsurge in identified VC infrastructure and effective operations. He quotes me in my Annex 5 of my proposal for saying that. I don't think I said that. We didn't identify any more VC as a result of that. I think that they did generate a number of effective low-level operations. Okay, page 175. A small typographical error. Ambassador Comer and the CIA chief of staff is stated. CIA chief of station.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Is there a chief of staff also? No, okay.
General Abrams. For Westmoreland. F. Parker went out there to become deputy chief of station.
Yeah, okay.
That's what he thought he was going to be. He never made it. Okay. New subject, page 199, a statement that district level 103 DIOCs were functional.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, almost 50% of their time was spent on tactical order of battle information. And I just have a note there, Bob Wall, that was one of the things, traps he fell into.
Okay.
And that was a constant struggle. Are you going to maintain the integrity of the civilian operation, or are you not? Okay, new subject. Let's see, it's 20 after 11. Page 216.
I have another tape. This one will run out at 11:30, and I'll pop another one in for half an hour.
Okay, finally. I have we see that in the Vietnamese documents that national police were given the leadership role in all this, which was really quite good, because as I said before, everybody, including the Vietnamese political leaders, had nothing but contempt for the national police.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's the CIA sales effort that put the national police into the forefront of this thing.
Okay.
Page 229.
And you never use national police to mean special branch. I mean,
I'm talking in general.
Yeah, you're.
I'm talking about both of them. When I say national police, I mean both of them.
Okay.
We hustled the special branch in particular in within any intelligence context.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of any Vietnamization, or I should say in terms of a nation building, or in terms of the long haul, we talk national police, generic.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's one of the most critical distinctions that has to be made.
Yeah.
National police as opposed to special branch. Yeah.
Okay, new subject, page 229. Top of page. Comer, there's a reference here, or the directive. The directive stating that resources will be marshaled to concentrate to permit a rifle shot rather than a shotgun approach to mm-hmm. the central target, blah, blah, blah. My note is, this is vintage Comer.
Okay.
It's his language. I had to rewrite some memoranda over about three or four times for him in May of 1967 just to use that particular language, rifle shot versus a shot.
Incidentally, from November to May of 67, November 66 to May of 67, are you still traveling the country?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, consulting with your regional officers and doing all that stuff? Okay.
Sure. Except now I didn't have any command relationship with
them. Right, consulting.
Now I was just a headquarters staff officer, and some of the Reuters told me to go screw myself, and most of them didn't.
Okay.
But, because most of them also recognize that a staff officer at headquarters has some influence.
Might as well agree with the person. Yeah, be agreeable rather than adversarial. Okay.
That's right. Okay.
But in regard to special branch operations, you still had control over them.
No, not control.
Just all right.
Just staff relationship. Okay. They line of command went through them. Okay, page 235. We're talking about some committee. I suppose it's we're talking about the Phoenix committees. And I guess this is the on the Vietnamese side.
Yeah.
And the remark with the committee chaired by a military official on page 235, military intelligence priorities dominated over police intelligence priorities. Just major problem. Just
why don't you continue to do that into the tape? I'll get my...
Okay. Page 309, reference to the volunteer informant program, rewards for information leading to the arrest of VC on a 10 most wanted list, key communist official. This is vintage John Hart, proposed by him in the summer of 1966. There was a long history of bounty programs, of course. And so there's lots of argument and discussion about this kind of approach. But John Hart said he wanted it, and it was later incorporated into Phoenix.
Can you elaborate something about the history of the bounty program?
Not really. I'm sorry. But they had them in Malaya, and they had them in the Mau Mau in South Africa, or in Africa, and various...
So it's not necessarily a history that's...
Vietnamese. No. Although I think they had even tried in Vietnam at one time, too. Okay, page 319. The statement, quote, recruit in place, induce defections, capture, kill, or wound, close quote. My comment there is, I just never realized my instructions to province officers and regional officers would survive in this fashion. But it did. It's part of the doctrine.
Okay.
But I coined that language, or actually a recruit, defect, capture, or kill. This was a short form of that.
We talked about that before you read this, right, too, so that must have been satisfying to see.
Okay. Page 347, Hamlet Evaluation System. There was in existence a countrywide security evaluation system, which was run by USAID, which was not very good. And Comer brought the Hamlet evaluation system to country with him, really. And it was a somewhat of, I think, a little easier to implement and somewhat of improvement than over the USAID business. So even though I personally don't like systems like that, couldn't really argue with it because the need was there. You had to have some kind of measure of where you stood.
Okay.
Pages 394 through 396, I simply refer back to pages 181, 182. This is the detention and processing annex of the 1967 proposal, which was incorporated lock, stock, and barrel into the ISEC's task papers,
okay,
MACV directives, and so forth, and also responsible for the bringing to country, which was John Hart's idea, bringing to country of some legal specialists to review the whole problem.
And that was Robert Gould. Did you ever meet him?
I never met the attorneys. I know that I was back in Washington when they went out to hire them and so on.
Okay.
So much for that. New subject, page 399. Discussion of the PIC program. Mm. And Ralph Johnson simply has this wrong. It's just that simple. In his view here, what he says is that the CIA was drafted to construct facilities meeting the requirements of the detention and et cetera, problem.
Okay.
And that he talks about the PIC, the province interrogation centers, were the result of this. And he said medical facilities were also included, and in 1968, most facilities were completed. The fact is, the PIC program, as you now know, had nothing to do with Phoenix. It was in existence and practically finished by the time that Phoenix came about. So that this should read, and in 1966, most facilities were completed.
Okay.
And as I say, the PICs could only hold maybe 20 or 30 subjects at a time anyway.
Okay.
But the PICs had offices in them. They had file sections.
Muldoon drew me a diagram.
Very good.
That's one of the things we did. I sat down and I said, what do they look like? And he drew the whole a diagram of the whole thing.
It's a French Foreign Legion post out in the middle of the jungle.
Yeah, he showed me that where the kitchen was, where the file cabinets were and everything. He also said that it was CIA architects who designed it.
Yeah, okay. But they had in there their
support system,
their translators. They had people that did biographic research, biographic files, and infrastructure files. Everything.
Was this going to be where you were going to broach the subject of torture?
Not. I think that came a little later.
Okay.
Yeah. No. The next page. Okay.
Okay.
So that. So much for the pics. Page 400, they refer to traditional methods employed by Vietnamese, both communist and government, looked upon torture as a normal and valid method of obtaining intelligence. And my comment on that is it's simply Oriental tradition, but also the French. Vietnamese didn't learn, the French wouldn't learn any lessons from the Orientals, take my word for it.
I know about Algeria.
And we, later on in here, and I don't know whether I have a note on that or not, but later on in this book, Ralph talks about the orders proscribing torture or coercion to the American advisors.
Yes.
Under the Phoenix program.
Right.
With the idea being that they will absolutely not do it.
Yeah.
They will not stand by to witness it. They will try to exercise influence to prevent it. But if they fail, they will not be a part of it. And C, they will make a report in writing immediately. And D, I think that if they don't do these things, they're going to find themselves back in the United States very quickly.
Right.
Okay. That is, I'm happy to see that I said exactly the same things to my province officers from the third day I was in country.
Okay.
But I was always afraid to put damn thing in writing because some journalists get a hold of it, and the implication was that there was widespread torture, which we were parties to,
okay.
Which we were not. But my statement simply was that any of you guys ever get caught in this stuff without doing something about it, I'll have you outside, I'll have you going home in 24 hours.
The military seals, yeah, Green Berets.
Let's cut it off again.
Yeah, because...
Or tough.
Yeah.
For everybody else later.
My father was captured in New Guinea.
Yeah.
My father was a prisoner of war in the Philippines in a Japanese camp. Yeah. There's nothing that I... Those stories that I haven't heard.
Yeah. Okay, page 436, new subject. It's talking about Colby is nominated as Director of Central Intelligence, replacing Helms. I don't see how Johnson could make a mistake like that. It's replacing James Schlesinger.
Schlesinger, right.
Yeah. Okay.